Hey guys, I'm your host Adam McCabe and welcome to the Gay Footballers Podcast. I want to thank you so much for giving me some of your time this week and thanks for tuning in. Just a quick reminder, the Gay Footballers Podcast is the podcast with the goal to spread the awareness of LGBTQ and ally representation in sports. The main focus of this podcast is on soccer, or as some people call it, football, but I'll also be exploring other sports and personalities, and each episode will consist of a 30 to 45 minute interview with an individual who is making an impact in their sporting discipline. This can be a former or current athlete, a member of an organization's front office, a sports journalist, a referee, whomever. But each interview will uncover the challenges, opportunities, and successes this individual is facing and dealing with in their discipline within sport. Every once in a while, I'll also do a podcast interview of something that interests me or someone that interests me as a gay footballer, as I am. And this is one of those interview episodes. So, a long time ago, after my story came out about being a semi-professional and professional gay soccer player, I connected with someone very early on who talked to me about using my platform for good and using my platform for change. And this individual was Kat Craig. Now, Kat lives in the United Kingdom in a great part of London called Highgate, and she's the CEO of something called Athlead. And you can check them out on Twitter at Athlead underscore UK. So that's at @athlead underscore UK. But what Athlead is a consultancy firm, a nonprofit consultancy firm that helps professional athletes use their platform to improve other people's lives. And what I really liked about Kat in our early conversations was her idea of saying, hey, you've got a big platform, you know, you can use it to change the world and to make things better. And I just loved our conversations early on. And now Kat and her other half, Nick, and I have become really good friends. And when I went over to do the conference this past February for just a ball game at Wembley Stadium, Kat hosted me. And, you know, we go back and forth about ideas I have and people I should interview, and she's really helped connect me with quite a few great interview opportunities, and we've written a few articles together. But anyways, I thought it'd be a great opportunity to talk about Kat and what she does at Athlead and just the amazing things that she and Nick do. I mean, they're a great team and they really have an outlook on making the world a better place for people who are underprivileged and just trying to do good. And I really love these guys, and I knew I wanted to have them on the podcast as soon as I started it, because again, they've really helped me get to this place, and also the things that Kat is doing with Athlead are just amazing. She's going to talk about some amazing projects she's doing, and it just blew my mind, the things that she's doing, again, to try to change people's life for the better. So I'll be quiet because I'm going to let Kat talk about all the amazing things she's doing. But I'd like to introduce you guys to Kat Craig. Enjoy. Hey guys, I'm here in northern London in Highgate, and it's been the end of an incredible 5-6 days here in London, speaking at the Just a Ball Game conference at Wembley Stadium, the Stronger Together conference. And I was so lucky to stay with a amazing friend, colleague, mentor, I don't know, all the above, Kat Craig, and she is here with me on the podcast today. Good morning.
Good morning, Adam. Thank you so much for having me. What an introduction.
So Kat and I met, gosh, maybe 3-ish years ago, yeah. Online, or I guess via phone online. And I'm going to let you tell kind of how we met, but it's been such a great collaboration since we've met. she's really pushed me in terms of being an activist and using the platform I have for good, and that's kind of the space she lives in. And I'll let her go over all the amazing things and projects and studies she's doing. There's quite a lot, but again, it's something that really interests me and obviously is passionate for me, so I wanted to bring her on today to talk about her work.
Cool, yeah, thank you. So I'd forgotten how we met. It's not even that long ago, but it feels like we've known each other for a long time. And it wasn't until yesterday evening when we were at Wembley Stadium and you introduced me to John Holmes, who's a Sky journalist, and he's the guy who wrote your original story for the British press, certainly, that talked about your experience as a footballer in England and not being able to be open about your sexuality and how that affected your well-being and your travels to other countries afterwards. And I just remember reading the story. So I told John that actually we met because of that story, and I'd totally forgotten this. So yeah, I remember reading it and thinking it was really inspiring and thinking, gosh, there are not enough stories like this out there, because I believe it's so important that people have role models. And it was really moving to hear effectively how you had to choose, right, between your love for football and then your well-being and being a real, authentic version of yourself. And that really touched me. And I guess I also thought that it must have been quite... that's quite a lonely space to be one of the few footballers who's spoken up, particularly in the UK, where it's really still quite difficult. There aren't any current openly gay footballers playing the top tiers of football. So yeah, it struck me as a little lonely. So I just reached out. I just wanted to send you a message on Twitter, and I was like, hey, this is amazing. I just want to know that you know, we support you, and if there's anything that we can do, we would love to help. So yeah, and you replied, which is great. Why did you reply? I'm interested, actually.
You know, when I came out, my big thing was when I was playing in the UK, and I told this yesterday at the conference, you know, Robbie Rogers had come out, but he was retired. So, you know, even though that was amazing, there was still no one that was active. And my whole goal was I wanted to come out and be an active player, because I think it's a little different. I mean, I still commend people who have retired and come out, but there just wasn't someone that I could look to and say, that is me. And I thought, well, you know, why don't I be that someone that someone can say, okay, if it's semi-professional, if it's professional, I want to be like this guy. I know there's someone out there like me. And when you reached out to me and I read about, you know, your work and what you do, I thought, man, this is kind of the avenue I want to go with this. And I think a lot of people come out and then stop and they don't further their activism. And I thought, you know, I don't just want to come out and then leave it at that. I want to do more and impact the lives of people more and really continue the discussion. And that's why I messaged back.
Oh, good. Well, I'm pleased you did. And I think that experience that you had is really common. That's really why we set up Athlete, which is the organisation where I work. And it's because we hear so many stories, really powerful stories, of athletes who use their platform to address particular social issues. And in the US, that's really grown, I think, in recent years with Kaepernick, and of course, you know, even years before that, Muhammad Ali and Billie Jean King and so many, you know, John Carlos, amazing examples of athlete activists. Interestingly, in the UK and in Europe, it's starting, but I think there are some cultural differences that, particularly in the UK, people are quite reluctant to stick their head above the parapet. It's not really part of the British culture. And you see some really important examples recently. Raheem Sterling talking about racism, particularly racist portrayals of players in the media and by the media. But it's unusual, and I'm not quite sure how well the British public always reacts to it. So we felt that, first, people who experienced injustice or inequality should be allowed and enabled and supported and empowered to speak out about that. But we also recognise that's a big thing. And, you know, I'm a little older than you. And so I realised that if I was in your shoes, you know, it took me a long time to understand how to, you know, how to pitch a really great story or how to partner with the best people. And there are some real shortcuts and pitfalls, I guess, to athlete activism. And that's what the team at Athlete specializes in. And that's what I love about our collaboration is that, you know, I read your story, it inspired me. It was exactly the kind of situation where I felt I would just love to be able to kind of support you and help you move that journey forward, because I could see what an inspirational person you are and could be and continue to be. So yeah, good. I'm pleased that you did reply. And I should say, there was a very small part of me that you visited twice, right? This is your second trip.
Yeah.
And this time I managed to convince you to play some football with my husband and his football team. And for anybody who doesn't know, Adam is an extremely good footballer. And yeah, that was kind of the cherry on top that we got to, you know, bring you into the team.
Yeah.
And yeah, you did an amazing job. A lot of running.
A lot of running. That's what I'm known for, running my head off.
A lot of good tackles and some excellent first touch passes. So, yeah. Yes. So you are always welcome.
Thank you. And just for the listeners, it was actually an amazing experience because Arsenal, right next to the Emirates Stadium, their home stadium, they've got like a community center where you can rent out space, and it's called like the Arsenal Hub, and it's just a little indoor area. But I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, Atlanta United's done really well with helping set up pitches around Atlanta to give access to football or soccer to underprivileged individuals. And this is just another example of a football club. I mean, literally right next to the stadium. I mean, you could play pickup before a game, play, and then walk over to the match. I mean, it's pretty unique and crazy, and I'd love to see that more in the U.S., giving accessibility to soccer to all people. But anyways, let's shift. I mean, Athlete, you know, you guys do a lot of amazing things, and it's so interesting to me because, you know, even while I've been over here for these 5-6 days, one project is with a famous rugby player. The next is with Afghan refugee women who are playing football. I mean, it's just so diverse. And I'm like, wow, you touch a lot of different areas, but do a lot of amazing work. So tell me, how did Athlete start?
Yeah, I have to think back a little now. So I guess what it was is my background is actually as an attorney. So I work in human rights. I've worked in law firms, but also big international not-for-profits. And my real personal interest is in positive social change. I want to live in a society where we love each other and respect each other, and everybody can be who they are and love who they are and do what they want without being judged or prejudiced. So that's my kind of personal passion, and that's always been at the heart of everything that I do. And then I just managed to build a team of people around me where there was a theme and an interest in sport, in and around sport, through coaching or playing or spectators. And that saying that we hear a lot around how sport can unite people. And I guess, so Athlete was set up about 3 years ago, and it was at the time of, I think it was the run up to Brexit, which is the UK's vote to leave the European Union, which was run on a really divisive, racist, insular platform. It was very close to Trump's election and all of the divisive language that has followed that. And yet there were these spaces through athletes and in sport where people were coming together. So Athlete was really set up to recognize power that not just sport but our sporting heroes have, and that they can use their platform to improve the lives of others. But that social change is tricky, and we shouldn't expect people who have spent their whole life honing their skills as an athlete to also, usually at quite a young age, be able to make all the right decisions and really run effective social programs or campaigns. particularly when you're in the public eye. I think it's the same in the US, but here certainly footballers, you know, they sneeze and it makes the front cover. So we have a bit of a habit in the UK of liking to see, like liking people to fail or watching people to fail. And I think that causes a real reticence and reluctance amongst athletes to put their head above the parapet. So we saw an amazing potential in an industry with a group of people who we recognised wanted to do good, but either didn't know how or felt concerned that there were risks around that. And then on the other hand, we had a group of people who all we'd ever done really was kind of strategic social change in the education sector, in the human rights sector, in, you know, different fields through different methods and channels. And we thought, why not try and bring the two together? So we set up Athlead, which is effectively a consultancy. So we support professional and elite athletes who want to speak out or support social issues.
I mean, that's such an amazing idea. And I love how, again, how you're pushing athletes who have these huge platforms to do better, or not do better, but just to find a passion that they can tie themselves to, or if they do have a passion, to further it. And I just love that aspect of Athlead. And again, that's why I was interested, because I had a passion. I had something I wanted to stand for, but I didn't really know, besides writing an article, like what to do and how to do it. And that's why I think it's been a great marriage with Athlead, because you've helped me find, you know, events or just outlets and ways for me to express my platform and to be that kind of role model and mentor. And I think very early on, we co-authored a piece. I mean, and that's just one example of ways you've helped me kind of be able to be an activist. And it was for the Huffington Post, I believe.
Yeah, and vice versa. I mean, I feel the same way, and that's why I love my job. Right, you would be an amazing activist whether you're a footballer or not, but the reality is that the footballing aspect gives you a platform. People will invite you to events, people will publish articles that you write, and it's really inspirational that you use that. And that HuffPost piece just came out of various Skype chats. We've just been chatting a lot of the time about what was wrong, how we wanted to make it better, and yeah, we just decided to co-author something and pitch it. It must have been about 2 years ago, because yeah, I think it was around about this time. And that was sort of the first concrete thing that we did together. And I loved it. It was a good article. We should repost that.
And we should. I'll put a link to it in the description. But even when I look at this project that I'm doing now with the Gay Footballers Podcast, I mean, again, this is an extension of activism here. It's something that I kind of bounced off of you, and we've gone back and forth about what it needs to be or what this could or should look like. And here I am. Here's another way I've thought, this is how I can change the way football is looked at. Here's the way I can be an activist for this community and also try to affect change. And I'm really excited for this kind of project and this journey and to see where it's gone. And also for all the connections and all the, oh, you should interview this person, and oh, this would be a great interview. You know, that's things I wouldn't have if I wouldn't have come and worked with athletes. So I would say anyone who's kind of in this space and needs help with activism or needs a way to channel, you know, what they believe in and what they're trying to change, I would definitely suggest you reach out to Kat, an athlete, and we will share all of the links, and I'll let her shout out all the social media towards the end. But on that note, I want to focus on some of the projects you're doing, because again, it amazes me. And I've been here, again, 5 days, and this whole Afghan women's football and refugees, you've been kind of running all over the place, taking care of that, having phone calls here and there. So can you speak a little bit about what's going on with that and the work you're doing there?
Yeah, absolutely. So as most of your listeners will know, I think for a long time, being a woman in Afghanistan is really hard. And being a woman footballer in Afghanistan, I think, just adds another layer to it. So in recent years, Afghanistan has formed a national women's football team. They've competed in international tournaments. And that was initially hailed as a really great sign of change until last year, so 2018, in or around November, December 2018, an article was published in the Guardian newspaper that set out a series of allegations from a number of women who'd played and coached in the Afghanistan national team. And they had been raped and sexually abused by the president of the Afghan FA. FIFA carried out an investigation. It started, I think, sometime in March 2018. It's ongoing. The president of the FA has been temporarily suspended pending a full investigation. But it's a really horrific situation. And I heard about it. I knew one of the women who had played for the national team already and had moved to Europe some time ago. Just because her promotion of women's football had really resulted in a lot of hostility. But this just took it to the next level. And there's a number of things I think are really important. You know, I believe everybody has the right to play football safely, or any sport, or in fact do anything that is kind of, you know, socially, you know, safe for other people. As long as you're not harming anybody else, I feel you should do what you want to do. But the idea that just playing football is so precarious in and of itself is obviously very kind of moving. Then the idea that these really young women were being horrifically, you know, beaten, sexually abused, harassed in a community and a society where your sexual integrity is a matter of family pride. So they weren't able to then seek support. They weren't able to tell their families, right, because it would affect the family standing in the community or the way the families would react to them. So you have all these young women facing horrific abuse who are just dealing with the trauma and the pain on their own. So there's been a number of efforts by media outlets, by FIFPro, which is the International Footballers Trade Union. They've been really great to support these women who are around, kind of dotted in and around different places. But more than that, also to put pressure on institutions to make sure that this doesn't happen again, that this is better regulated, that we have better safeguarding for not just children and vulnerable adults, but women in countries where we know positions of power will be exploited. I think it's really interesting as well that one of the solutions is, I think, to promote more women's coaches, right? I don't believe that male coaches shouldn't coach women or vice versa. I don't think that's true. But I do think we have a lack of women's coaches. So I think it's all about creating a safer environment for women. And if you speak to the players, they want this to be football's Me Too, right? They don't want to have gone through this for no reason. They recognise that although their situation is particular in Afghanistan, there are women all around the world who are being sexually exploited and abused in and through football. And we can't let the beautiful game that we all love and that has so much to offer us create such a dangerous and negative situation. So, yeah, fingers crossed for that one.
I mean, it's such powerful stuff. I mean, and that's such a huge, I mean, a huge deal. And to know that your work, being a part of that and working with that, again, is very admirable. And, again, it shows, that, I'd say, the breadth of what Athlete does. It's helped me, but then here you are working with Afghans women's soccer. And then I know you also did a study in the Netherlands, which we have plans to go to because there's a lot of good opportunity over there and a lot of good work that the Dutch FA are doing. But kind of speak about that study. I know it's not published yet, or it's soon to be published.
Soon. I'll give you a sneak preview.
Okay, yes. So let's hear about it. What was this study about?
So, yeah, the study was born out of, I guess, a slight frustration that a lot of people in an athlete's ecosystem, particularly agents who are motivated primarily by the bottom line, were blocking their clients from engaging in social issues, which I think is a real kind of free speech issue as well, right? There's actually a real problem there. And it's because a lot of the ecosystem and the industry, particularly football, but in other sports as well, is all about, you know, money and results. And the two are obviously very closely interlinked. And so we wanted to demonstrate that there was a real advantage to people, not just the communities that athletes were trying to support, but this was a two-way thing, right? And if you could demonstrate that athletes benefited from some kind of social engagement and communities benefited, and it didn't present any negative disadvantages on a financial or a performance level, then you kind of get a win-win-win. So we started looking for various studies, and after a long time, we realized there was nothing published about this. So that annoyed me. And then I started thinking how, you know, we should start this. Like, if nobody's done this, we should just make a start. And so I worked with someone who was studying at the University of Amsterdam and her faculty, and I proposed an exploratory piece of research that looked at athletes doing good and how it's impacted on them. We all know that having an athlete ambassador for your charity or your cause is really, really helpful. We know that athletes can be incredibly generous, but what does it do for them? And we looked at four key questions, which is: how did social engagement by an athlete impact on the athlete's well-being, their career transition after they finished competing, their performance, and then also a little bit at their brand value, the kind of commercial aspect of it. And we interviewed a load of great people. Adam, you were one of them. Thank you. And we interviewed a former England soccer captain. We interviewed Olympic gold medalist. We interviewed an amazing guy called Chris Mosier, who's, you know him, yeah, Team USA first trans Team USA athlete. He's incredible. And a bunch of other people, captain of the English rugby team. We interviewed a couple of, yeah, players from all over the world. And it was fascinating. It was really great. And there were some really, really, really clear outcomes, which is it's really good for athletes' well-being to have something else to focus on as well as their sporting obligations. It helped them build closer bonds with their family, learn new skills, etc., and be part of a community. And I guess also have more than a kind of one-dimensional sense of identity. And I don't know if that speaks to you at all, because that question around identity when you were a player was so, so important. But I know you've always had other interests, but I think for many other athletes, it's very much kind of, they have no autonomy because they get told when to get up, what to eat, when to train, what to wear, when to get on a plane. You know, there's not a lot of freedom. So we got really positive feedback around that well-being point. Career transition is great in the sense that it teaches you a whole load of skills and builds on your skills as an athlete and gives you a bit of confidence that there's a load of stuff you've already learned that you can use kind of out in the real world. So those were really the main findings that we had. Interestingly, I asked everybody whether it had a negative impact on their performance, right? Whether they ever got distracted. And I am not and never will be and never could have been a professional or elite athlete. But it was interesting that everybody just looked at me and they were like, no. When you get to our level of performance, you perform. Like, that's the thing that you always do. And avoiding distraction is one of the reasons we were so good in the first place, right? That laser focus. So that will come out soon. And thank you again, Adam, for being part of that and everybody else who took the time to be interviewed. And we're hoping to publish that. And we hope that it will encourage the wider sporting industry to recognize that athlete activism and social engagement is a win-win-win situation, and it's here to stay, and it's something that should be encouraged and supported.
So on the basis of the study, and we've kind of had a bit of discussion about this. I feel like when I come here, I can stay up for like hours in the evening, just on and on, us having discussions. But how do we get more footballers or more athletes to become activists? I mean, I know we talked about, like, one that I know of is Juan Mata, but I don't know very many others. And I don't know if it's just because it's not, you know, they don't put it as much in the limelight, or it's not marketed as much, or I just don't see it or know it. But how do we get athletes to become more involved in activism?
I think, like with all things, role models are really important. So I think it's great what you're doing, and I think there's a lot of young British players particularly who look to the US, particularly the NBA, the NFL. You know, I think LeBron is an amazing example for a lot of young players here. You know, he's very, you know, very popular over in the UK as well. You know, undoubtedly one of the best, if not the best, NBA player of all time. So I think he has a number of quotes around how he takes his responsibility to lead really seriously, and that's both, you know, in the sporting arena and outside. So I think that's a really great start, is to show that it's possible. And I think then we need to also show people how important they can be. It was something I was really surprised about, having not worked in the sporting industry for decades. When I started speaking to these really incredible athletes, you know, athletes who, okay, I'll give you a concrete example. So one of the people we work with is a footballer called Giovanni van Bronckhorst, played at Rangers, he won the Premier League and the FA Cup at Arsenal, he won the Champions League at Barcelona, and he played for the Dutch national team. If you haven't seen it, look at the 2010 World Cup. I think it's either the final or the semi-final, and he scores the most ridiculous goal from left back. So, and he's now the manager at Feyenoord, which is one of the top teams in the Netherlands. And I was chatting to him and his wife. We run a really cool program with them, helping young disadvantaged people through sport and the teachable moments through sport. And I was chatting to them about how they first started engaging in this and eventually set up their own foundation. And his wife, who's an amazing woman, was saying, I remember the first time when like the local children's hospital came to us and asked us to help, and we were like, what do they want from us? Why do they what on earth can we do? And she said they were sitting around the kitchen table going, you know, what on earth can we do? And I found that so fascinating, because particularly in his hometown of Rotterdam, he is a legend, right? Like, he is such a loved footballer, and he's intelligent, he's, you know, he's well-spoken, he's, you know, made a decent living out of football, he's popular, you know, you can think of so many ways that he can do so much good, and he's far more than a checkbook. Sure, it's great that he donates money, he's incredibly generous, and that's really commendable and admirable, but he is so much more than a checkbook. He has so many other assets which he's now exploring, and I'm really delighted to say that working with them has enabled them to kind of grow their program. It's now going to scale around different locations in Europe. So I think part of it is reminding people of just how amazing the changes that they can create are. And then I think the third point is, so I think one is role models, two is, you know, a version of recognition or empowerment. And then the third is support. Right? People are busy, particularly professional athletes are incredibly busy. There is not a lot of spare time. And I think there is a specialist skill to doing good well. And so that's what we try and do. Don't make me compete at the seat, like, you know, it's a difficult level on the football pitch. That's not my job. But ask me to run a cool campaign or help you with your advocacy, and that's where I can support.
Okay, Kat, and can you tell a little bit about the work you're doing with rugby players here in the UK?
Yeah, I think there are some really exciting things going on. Rugby players are really good, actually. There's a bit more of a culture amongst rugby players to work on charitable issues. Certainly, I think there's a culture of raising funds, and increasingly there are more players who are trying to use their platform for good. And I can't say too much yet, but I know that there is some really great work being done, and that we're starting to offer some support around different projects, including issues around mental health, which I think is so important. Actually, the rugby kind of institutions have been quite good around mental health. They've run a number of campaigns. But I still think having your, you know, some of the most brilliant athletes telling their story, and these people who you've held in such high esteem and who are, you know, reached the pinnacle of their career and then are still willing to say that they have had their own struggles and their own difficulties, it makes it accessible and acceptable for us to talk about our own challenges as well. And I think that's something that I'm really excited about, and I hope that we can do another version of the podcast, round two, series two.
Yeah.
And I can tell you a bit more about that. But yeah, I think that's an example of people taking a really important leadership role, showing vulnerability, putting themselves out there in a way that makes kind of us mere mortals feel that we can also tackle some of our challenges in life.
Okay, so last thing, Kat. You know, I've been here working on homophobia in football. That's what this whole conference was about, homophobia and transphobia. What are your thoughts on how do we make football a more inclusive place?
Wow, yeah. I feel that we still have quite a long way to go, I'll be honest. And I'm really inspired. The conference yesterday was really inspiring, was really encouraging. I think we need those kinds of events. I think I was slightly disappointed that the majority of the audience came from an LGBTQ community, and it's such a shame that the big hitters from the football clubs aren't attending those events, because I think hearing stories from people about their experience would help shift a little bit. I do think naivety and ignorance is part of it, right? So I think that certainly the English football culture is so male dominated. It's the bedrock of toxic masculinity. It's not just homophobia, right? There's a concept of the proper football man. There is a very archetypal, particular version of old English football, which is homophobic, it's xenophobic, it's sexist. And that sits at the heart of English football. Now, that's slowly being tackled. And I think it's really important in that there is great allyship. So I think at the heart of all of that exclusivity sits that toxic masculinity. I think as women and LGBTQ community and people of colour can all come together and dismantle that, that will be a really powerful way to tackle it. In practice, I agree that these conferences are great. I think we should be taking them to clubs. I would love next time when you're here to try and do a tour of some of the clubs, get you speaking to maybe some of the younger players, maybe some of the safeguarding teams, right? The welfare officers, the player liaison officers, get you there and let them hear your story and hear about what it feels like to be in such an environment that is not accepting, where you don't feel that you can be yourself. And as with all kind of social campaigns, I think stamina, and you know about this, you'll run 90 minutes non-stop, right? But that's what you made a career out of, as well as, you know, great tackling, great passing, great technique. But like you say, you're a hard worker, and sometimes there aren't shortcuts, right? It is about sticking together, you know, staying positive, not giving up, being resilient and having stamina. And I really do believe that in the end, we will start to make very concrete changes. But I think it would be naive to say that that's not a long struggle. And let's stick together and keep plugging away at it.
Yeah, I think one of the big themes that we got out of the conference yesterday is it's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's going to be slow and steady, but that's right, we cannot just give up because it's not changed so quickly. We are starting to slowly see changes and see more campaigns. And I just love coming over here, obviously, because it's the home of football, right? But there's just so many people within the game here in the UK that are out and are working in football. And or there are so many organizations like Kick It Out, like Football v Homophobia, that are really trying to change the landscape of football. And I always appreciate coming here to see you, because I feel like I come here and I've got an agenda and I leave and my agenda is like quadrupled. I mean, I came here and now I'm set out like, I want to be the first LGBTQ pundit or color commentator in football at the highest level or in MLS. And those are the types of things that we don't see in today's society. And so it almost feels like it's a far reach because there's no one out there like it. So I want to thank you for letting me stay here for this time, and again for pushing me to be a better, I'd say, human being, a better activist, and really collaborating with me on my work.
Right back at you, Adam. Thank you.
Would you like to go ahead and share any social media for you, for Athlete, and I'll make sure also to add it in the description for this episode.
Thanks, yeah. So our website is www.athlead, which is A-T-H-L-E-A-D, and then uk.com. And I'll ping you over all of the socials and we can put them in the description.
Again, thank you so much, and I can't wait till next time.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey guys, so I really hope you enjoyed that episode with Kat. Again, as you probably heard, she's doing some amazing things. She's constantly has projects going on that just blow my mind, and she's also an incredible host. So thank you, Kat, for hosting me when I come to the United Kingdom. I just really love what she's doing at Athlead. And again, I'm going to shout those the handle out for that on Twitter. Please go check her out, check her website out. Give her a shout if you're interested or if you think there's anything you can do to help, especially for my audience who's in the United Kingdom. She's doing some amazing things, and any support you can give her, or, you know, if you want to become part of a project, help her out. I know she would really enjoy that. So her website is athleaduk.com. That's athleaduk.com. And she's on Twitter at athlead_UK. So that is at athlead_UK. Again, go check out what Kat's doing and see if you can get involved or if you want to help out. As always, I want to thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. We wouldn't be where we are today without your support, without you tuning in, and without you sharing it with your friends. Please do me a favor, hit that like, hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. This just makes sure you're always in the loop and you're updated with every single episode. We're on social media, so do me another favor, hit that like, hit that follow button on our different social media channels. We're on Twitter at TGFpod. We're on Instagram at TGFootballersPodcast. Our email is TGFootballersPodcast@gmail.com. And we're on Facebook at The Gay Footballers Podcast. I'm your host, Adam McCabe, and thank you again so much for giving me some of your day. Cheers.